Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 6, Episode 81, and it's our last episode before Super Bowl 50 coming up in Santa Clara, just outside San Francisco. Super Bowl 50 with the Denver Broncos and the Carolina Panthers. And the Steelers continue their off-season work, their signings, getting ready for the 2016 season, Dave, and we've got some information on salary caps. We've got some more future signings. We'll break down the game a little bit. And just for those interested, I had a chance to have Jerome Bettis on my show yesterday. He was out in Radio Row, and we chatted for about 10 or 15 minutes. First time I've had him on the show, obviously a beloved figure in Pittsburgh sports, very articulate, interesting guy. He told a very funny story about Dan Kreider. So if you want to check that out, you can find it on ESPN Pittsburgh, our podcast page. So, Dave, let's have at it.
Yeah, let's kind of start with Johnny Manziel and that news that came out yesterday. And really, it's become sort of a daytime drama, I guess, the last couple of days here. I know you're a bigger Johnny Manziel fan than I am. In fact, you're probably a lot bigger Johnny Manziel fan than I am. It's no surprise. And just to go over the chain of events here, Johnny Manziel last weekend, I believe, was accused of being involved in a kind of a domestic dispute with his girlfriend, who I think now is his ex-girlfriend, allegedly hit her a few times. There were no charges filed by the Fort Worth police. Hadn't really heard much since then. Then what was it earlier this week? I think the Cleveland Browns came out with a statement, and while they didn't say that they were outright going to release Johnny in March, they're going to outright release Johnny in March. In so many words, according to that statement. Fast forward now to what had happened on Thursday. Several of the media finally got a hold of the police report, and it looks pretty damning against Johnny Manziel, if you will. His agent, and why he would do this, I don't know. His agent released kind of a public statement this morning claiming that he was parting ways with Johnny Manziel. And then according to an interview, the Dallas Fort Worth paper there, Johnny Manziel's dad apparently told the paper that he's fearful his son won't reach his next birthday if he doesn't get help. So what are your overall thoughts on that? Has that kind of changed your opinion on Johnny last 48 hours?
No, my opinion hasn't changed on Johnny. I mean, look, there are two different things here. There's Johnny the football player, can he play in the NFL, and Johnny the person and what's up in his life. The reason the agent released the statement and parted ways with him, and I thought the statement was very heartfelt and very honest, was he realizes this guy's in incredible trouble and he needs to do something dramatic to entice him to get help. As you said, they admitted him twice, once to a psychiatric place for adults and once to an addiction center. And he was able to walk out of both places. They're not, there's certain laws that you're not able to kind of detain people against their will. So he walked out of both places. I mean, look, Johnny played some good football. I think that if his life's in order, he is a guy who is capable of being a backup in this league and maybe something more than that. Do I think he'll ever be a top 10 quarterback in the league? No, I don't. But, this is a whole different thing. This guy's got problems. It's sad. It's not, it's easy to bash Johnny for all the stupid stuff, but now, I mean, this really looks like he has serious mental and addiction issues. And if somebody's suggesting close to him that he might be suicidal, and his girlfriend suggested as much over the search last weekend, that's why one of the reasons they went looking for him, is this is really, this has the potential to be a really tragic story. People can debate whether you feel sorry for people with addiction issues or whether it's their own doing. Look, generally, my view on this is addiction issues are disorders like other things are disorders, and people need help to overcome them. So, you know, I feel somewhat sympathetic for Johnny. He's obviously done a lot of dumb things in his life, and most of those would appear now to be related to maybe alcohol and drugs, and I hope he gets it sorted out.
Well, he's been enabled, you know, it sounds like for a good long while. And, of course, being a college star.
Every athlete's enabled if they want to be, pretty much.
And being told how great you are, kind of a godlike complex, if you will, a superior type complex. It's not overly surprising that he is where he is at this point right now. But the worst thing that can happen right now, and I speak from experience on several topics on levels as far as this goes, is for people to continue to enable him. So you can wish and want people to get help as much as you would like, but until they want to get help, they're not going to get help. I mean, they might go in there to pacify someone else initially, but if the heart's not in it and they don't really, nothing magical happens in there on the other side of those walls. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, even if he goes, if he's not going with the right reasons, with the want to change, he's not going to change. Where do you think, you know, we're months away from this, obviously, and it's the back end of really the story here, but do you believe the alleged, you know, hitting of the girlfriend there? And if so, where do you think the commissioner will ultimately come in on this?
Well, you know, one is if no charges are filed, I'm not sure what the commissioner is able to do if it's he says, she says. So don't know. I mean, he certainly could be looking at a suspension here anytime. You know, there's a domestic dispute, and they'll want to do that stuff. So
Ben Roethlisberger was suspended for 6 games at first, and he was never charged.
Yeah, and that's one of the issues that people have. That's certainly, you know, a point of discussion that, you know, a lot of people think Ben got a bad deal.
Do you believe Ben got a bad deal?
I don't, because I don't think Ben necessarily thinks he got a bad deal. You know, I haven't revisited this topic in a long time, so I don't know if my thoughts have changed about it because the landscape has changed so dramatically since how we viewed these things when Ben was suspended versus how we view these things now.
I'm not sure I follow you there, but
you don't think the league's different now, how we view all this stuff and suspensions now than 6 or 7 years ago, 5 years ago?
I think we know more what happens is the thing.
No, I don't think we know more than we knew 5 years ago. I mean, people, you know, we don't know the exact details of a lot of these incidents with the Greg Hardy thing or the Ben Roethlisberger thing or the Ray Rice thing. You know, some we have the details, some we have less of the details. But the whole view of the league ever since the Ray Rice incident of how they deal with domestic violence and that type of stuff, the whole landscape has changed dramatically, at least in my opinion.
Well, I think he handled it wrong with Roethlisberger. For you know, first and foremost, because there was, you know, it was a he said, she said, right?
Basically, I mean, I have no idea what Ben said. You know, Ben had a hearing with him, so I don't have any idea kind of what was said in there.
You know, with the one in Las Vegas as well, too. Look, when you're surrounded by money, I bet it's very easy. You know, when you're very recognizable and people know you have money, I bet it's very, very hard to be in that limelight, you know, because you never know.
I'm willing to give it a try if anybody wants to, you know, support.
I would take the Howard Hughes route. I already do take that route, though. I just, nobody would ever see me. It's going to be interesting.
I think the real question is now, will somebody sign him? I mean, you know, now that that's a much, you know, that I felt like, you know, there were 2 or 3 spots where Johnny, you know, was a viable alternative, and maybe Jerry Jones will still see it as one. But I'm sure a lot of teams, you know, if there were teams out there considering it, this, I don't know if this is the last nail in the coffin, but it certainly might be.
Do you think I kind of saw this coming with him being a character issue?
Yeah, I don't think you're Nostradamus for that. I mean, you know, there've been 50 issues along the way, so.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is, do teams need to do a better job? I mean, people are always going to risk talent over character. But should there be some sort of, I don't know, baseline? I don't know. It's kind of hard. I think teams need to do a better job when it comes to the risk versus reward.
How do you do a better job of knowing how an individual is going to develop mentally, intellectually, with addiction issues? I mean, I think
there's baselines. I think there's studies that probably can be done. You know, look, the Steelers certainly probably have a standard when it comes to, you know, certain things.
It's funny because we were talking about that last night. I was talking with a couple of Steeler employees, and they said there's not a textbook from which they work. Each individual case is different.
Well, I mean, Mike Adams is the most recent kind of example of guys that where the risk was lowered by him being in the second round. Well, look, here's the thing overall, though. You know, since the age of the new CBA and the slotting, really, how much risk is involved now with a first-round draft pick outside of him being a first-round draft pick?
I'm not quite sure what you're asking, but there's tons of risk in terms of player.
In other words, what I'm saying is these first round guys don't get $60 million contracts.
Oh, right. I mean, that's obviously one of the best things that happened to the league is the new guys aren't being the highest paid players.
Right. In other words, well, in the case of Johnny Manziel here, are they going to take a little bit of a hit salary cap wise? Yeah. Is it going to kill them? No. You know, so it I guess what it does is it enables it promotes teams being able to take more risk on these kind of guys, right? When you have less money, less cap dollars involved in it. I mean, you're kind of promoting that, right?
Yeah, although I'm not sure we've seen the draft people draft differently at the top of the draft because of the salary structure. I mean that's a difficult thing to figure out.
If a guy has 22 sacks, he's got 22 sacks, right, in college, right? It's sad, and nothing's going to change it. People are people. You've got the human element involved here.
We're talking about Johnny, but we can just go through the guys last year who were issues. I mean, the kid from Missouri, Shane Ray, you know, things seemed to be going fine for him, and he fell in the draft. The kid who went to Dallas fell in the draft. I mean, you know, these guys, we don't talk about them because nothing bad happened to them. So, you know, Johnny gets all the attention, but, you know, they evaluate all these guys and some of them fall and they end up being good guys. Look, the tweet from Tyrann Mathieu today said, you know, Johnny should hit me up. It ain't easy, bro, but it's worth it. He's a guy who fell in the draft. And look at how that's worked out. I mean, if you're redoing the draft, he'd be, you know, a top 20 pick instead of going in whatever he went the third round. So
yeah, and you're not going to stop people from having problems. And there's always, like I said, there's always the risk versus reward angle. And now really the risk is kind of lowered due to the new CBA and the first round slotting and everything that goes along with that. So,
I guess what I'm saying and to that point is, I mean, if you were betting who was going to have, you know, Johnny Manziel or Tyrann Mathieu, one of them's career was going to go terribly and in terms of the addiction side of things, and one was going to get it sorted out in terms of the addiction, not the talent level. I mean, you're just flipping a coin and guessing because Tyrann Mathieu had more trouble in college than Johnny did.
I think it was pretty apparent that Johnny was a boozer.
Yeah, no, it was apparent that Tyrann Mathieu got kicked off his team, so – you know, I don't know that you can predict which way it's going to go for guys.
Yeah, but I think you can see the warning signs for sure.
That's what I'm saying. You could see the warning signs for Tyrann Mathieu, but he got it straightened out. There were warning signs for both guys, and one of them got it straightened out and one of them hasn't.
And personally, I don't think Johnny Manziel's all that as a quarterback either. So, look, whoever, when and if he is given another opportunity, it's going to be at near or about the minimum for sure. And it's going to have to take, it's going to take a special team and a special situation. He very well could be done, but you know, we live in an age whereby loves second chances, right? Loves to give second chances. And third chances, and fourth chances.
Yeah, certainly it's going to be. Hopefully, he's not in the headlines for a while, because if it's in the headlines, it's probably not going to be good stuff.
Not every quarterback under under six whatever is going to become Russell Wilson. You know, just not. this is probably bad now at this point, but boy, I sure would love to see him land in San Francisco with your buddy Chip Kelly.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't see that happening either. All right, what else? What else we got?
Salary cap. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, DeMaurice Smith had his annual talk with the media during Super Bowl week there on Thursday. As expected, the NFL salary cap will be going up once again in 2016. DeMaurice Smith said conservatively he expects the recent trend of $10 million per team increases to the salary cap to continue in 2016. So when you consider last year's cap was $143.28 million there, I would expect it at a minimum to be $153 million in 2016. I would expect maybe that number to come in probably around $153 and $155 million. So if you're scoring at home, and I know all of you are, that's $153 to $154 would probably be a good number to work with. When you're kind of talking about the Steelers as they sit right now, and it's totally impossible to track the salary cap in real time as far as future dates and all like that go right now. But best guesstimate right now is they're probably around $6.5 million under a projected $153 million number. I'll get a full update for you out on the site here in the coming week. But, that number is about what I think everybody kind of thought it would come in, this kind of $10 million in increase there. So there's some raw numbers to kind of work with. We'll know what the real number is maybe about a week or 10 days prior to the start of the new league year, probably right around March 1st.
I will tell you, you kind of go back and look historically at the salary cap and how things have gone, and it's amazing kind of how we've seen. And, I don't think people are surprised by this, but if you go back to, just go back to 2000, which, seems like a long time ago now. But, the salary cap was $62 million, and now we're talking about $153 million. In 15 years, it's not quite triple, but it's up 250% or whatever it is. That's an extraordinary move, and just shows you how much money is in the sport. 2000 doesn't seem like, the dark ages. $62 million. Now we got guys signing $100 million contracts over $100 million extension for Ben. It's mind blowing.
And it's based off of revenue sharing and all like that. When you're talking about that's an increase of $10 million per team. So you try to back out and split the hairs backwards off of that. You're talking about $320 million as a league, right?
Yeah, just an increase to pay salaries.
And then that's a percentage of revenue, right?
Oh, yeah, percentage of revenue. Yes, absolutely.
So that revenue, it's a machine.
In 1990, just to kind of put a finer point on it, just the numbers, 1995, the salary cap was $37 million.
We love us some football, don't we?
Yeah, exactly.
we buy us some football related things as well too. Kind of, and I hate to get off track here, but Where do you come in on the college and the college needing to be able to partake in more revenue and
well,
and
I assume when you mean college, you don't mean the schools, you mean the players, right?
I mean
the schools are making boatloads.
Right. I mean the players. I mean, but for take for example here, should we see paid all 22 college services? In other words, sort of like the NFL Rewind. How close are we to seeing either conference related all 22 video services paid?
I don't know what you mean by that. All 22 video services paid. What does that mean?
Well, you know, like you can get you can pay the NFL Game Pass and,
oh,
and get all.
Oh, I thought you were going to go in the paying players type of thing.
Well, no, I'm eventually getting that way, but I'm talking about ways schools can or would that even be a scratch the surface income to college that. In other words,
it's an interesting question, but I wonder if like Pitt started you could buy Pitt game film for, a season for $50.
Right.
I bet it would do it.
Or a conference. So let's go conference because it would be more, you're not going to, I'm sure you would have some Pitt fans pay that, but I'm talking about in general.
I think it's a really interesting idea. I've never heard anybody mention that before. I think people would like to do that. I don't know if there is a, I don't know if they're – I'm sure it's obviously easily done, you would think. I think it's an interesting idea. I'm going to run with it, make millions of dollars, and I'll mention you.
Yeah, 100 – I mean, and look, I'm sure I'm not the first one to suggest college conferences released or have a paid all 22 service.
But let's talk about the players because that's the topic that everybody gets to.
Right,
and
right.
My view is this. I'm a fool – look, if a kid goes to a college – and gets his education, his room, his board, and a stipend, which spending pizza money. If they get that, to me, they're not getting exploited. If you go to a school and have everything paid for, where others are paying, and people who discount that, I think it's total BS. I realize you're doing you're making money for the school, but you're also getting instructed in your sport. You're getting taught to perform in your sport as well. And, 95% of the people who play sports in college aren't going to turn into pros anyway. So I think I realize there's a ton of money in college sports and they could do certain things better about how they handle things. But I'm not a big believer that students are getting exploited.
I didn't say they were.
No, I know. I'm just telling you my opinion.
Right. Obviously, I think education has a price for sure. But to hear I guess what I'm saying is you hear some of these athletes talk about they really don't have money to do things with outside of school. So maybe I don't know how that works from a college to college situation. Maybe any of our listeners out there can give us a better idea of how much a kid on a full ride receives and if he has enough money to take his girlfriend out. To the movies and a steak dinner or something like that.
I don't know that I have enough money for that.
You know what I'm saying, though.
Yeah,
I mean, how close are they cutting it?
Yeah, I think they've started to give, some stipends, and I think that's it. When we talk about, I was an athlete at school. It's a very different thing. But, I mean, I ate with the guys on a football team. There were training tables, the food that they like. It's not like these guys don't have access to all the food they can eat and that type of thing. I mean, it is, they make. I read one story where one kid said, he's going to bed hungry, and I mean, it made me laugh. I mean, nobody at a Division I college football player is going to bed hungry unless he forgot to eat.
Or he got before the cafeteria was closed when he got in, right?
Right.
Any listeners out there, if you want to shed any light on that, if you're an athlete that maybe went to college on a football ride and all, share with us how right or wrong we are there. But You know, I think there's opportunities out there. I guess what I'm selfish here. I want more out of the college programs as a quote unquote YouTube scout. You know, maybe they don't want it out there for us to be able to break these guys down eight ways to Saturday. You know, but I mean, I think it's a way. And look, I mean, when a college makes more money, it doesn't just go to the football program either, right?
Oh no, I mean, the football program is funding every other sport.
Right, football, right. So everybody wins, right?
Yep.
Now, I don't know how we got off on that right there, but I mean, I think it's worth kind of discussing, and I mean, it is commonly and has been discussed for several years now here. But I mean, it is an interesting topic nonetheless when it comes to college athletes here. What else we got here? We got a big game going to happen on Sunday, I hear.
Yeah, is that lingerie bowl thing they got?
Yeah, that Super Bowl, I think, is what they call
puppy
it. Ball.
Puppy Bowl?
Super Bowl. It's funny to hear the story how that thing was named and how it's – oh, you know what I want to touch on real quick before we talk about the game? What do you think about that the person that's got the original – you know, that taped the first Super Bowl?
Now I haven't. I know the background of the story. I haven't read the detail of the story, but he has the only video of the game, and the NFL doesn't want to pay him for it, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they definitely don't want to pay him a lot of money, $1 million or something like that. Tried to offer him $20,000 or $30,000 or something like that, and then you know the NFL Network went as far as recently to kind of piece all the. I don't know how they were able to piece together that whole. Did you see that on the NFL Network?
I saw parts of it, and the backlash was fabulous. So for those who don't know, the NFL Network's put this tape out. And they didn't have audio with it, so they had a studio and they had, four guys in studio, and I guess they were constantly talking over the play, and they were.
It was horrible.
And then they redid it without any of that. Then they showed
right.
it with just the tape, and people said the analysis was just god awful. And then so the NFL Network, good on them. They heard the masses, and they showed it again.
But they kind of circumvented the family there, you know, that is kind of like, okay, you don't want to sell us that. We're going to kind of piece together our own thing here. And another thing is I think CBS or one of these were going to pay this person for an interview, to be shown, I think, during the pregame and the Super Bowl and all. And the NFL, I don't know, there's some rumor saying the NFL warned CBS not to do it or something like that. But poor guy's got this tape, and he can't. Here's the thing. Yeah, and then he can't sell it to anybody else because the NFL will sue him.
Well, you know? How's that work?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're selling something that's licensed, has the NFL license on it. Technically, the NFL has the rights to that kind of thing, right? So he can't profit from it. Is my understanding.
Huh, that's
go read that. There was a night. There was a great. In fact, I tweeted it out. What was it? New York Times.
New York Times. Or, yeah, I have it here listed, but I just haven't got to.
Yeah, run through that thing and read it. I mean, it's pretty fascinating there about this Super Bowl coming up here. Two really really good defenses here. And we talked about it most recently and how I kind of like to lean now towards the better defense. Who do you like better as far as defense goes in this one? Do you actually like the edge rushers of Denver versus really more of the consistent front four, I would say, of the Panthers combined with their inside linebackers?
The difference in the defenses to me is the non-Josh Norman secondary for Carolina. That's where the edge is. The front sevens are slightly built slightly differently, as you point out, but I think it's kind of a wash. I mean, Kuechly and Davis, aren't Miller and Ware, but they're as effective and as productive. In different ways. So, I mean, Quan Short's a really underrated guy. That I think the front, people know how much I like Malik Jackson. So I look at the front sevens as kind of a wash, and I give Denver an edge in the secondary. So I'd probably take their defense But obviously, we're all taking Carolina's offense over Denver's offense, probably.
But you know, the thing about that that Panthers front really can penetrate, and you know, there's been some questions about that Denver offensive line at times throughout the year, and. But on the flip side, I remember us talking back earlier in the season and say, boy, we can't wait to see the Denver versus the Indianapolis Colts game and how we just thought Denver was going to manhandle that front. And that didn't happen, you know. I think as a whole, going player by player and kind of named player by player, you're more inclined to go, well, Denver has more of the named players. But when you go when you start looking individually at the pieces, it's really hard not to like the Panthers defense here. And then when you throw into all this, I mean, Peyton Manning is the way Peyton Manning is going to beat you is by dissecting you and paper cutting you to death. Agreed?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, in my view, for Denver to win this game, Peyton's got to throw for about 275, two touchdowns, zero interceptions. Now, however they do it, they do it. But he's gonna have to win them the game. I really think that. So that's why I see it as, you know, tough to do.
And you know, not many people can name outside of Ted Ginn Jr. Really, I mean, can people really name guys in that Carolina receiving core right now? That was one of the main reasons. Boy, I hate to go back and look what I predicted them for the season. I certainly didn't have them winning the Super Bowl and didn't have them winning the playoffs because you know once they lost Kelvin Benjamin, I thought, oh man, this receiving core is a mess. And I really kind of thought of their offensive line that way as well, too. But their offensive line really has played well. What's the biggest X factor in this game for either team? Is it the Panthers' offensive line?
The Panthers' run game, offensive line, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it would be the determining factor.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of with you there, too. I think running game / offensive line for the Panthers is probably – one of the biggest X factors in this game, you know, and combine that with the Denver front there. You know, I think if after this game is over, if you look back and you know, Carolina is only able to rush the football, you know, three or less yards per average there, and they're having, you know, they only get about 17 rushes in this game. I think it's a huge determinant point. If you go back and you watch the game against the Falcons, the game that they lost, talking about the Panthers this year, and how they really weren't as – they were able to kind of control the run early. They were able to take away play action from Cam Newton. They were able to stick with you know, Greg Olsen and all those eligibles down the field, and it really made life kind of miserable for Cam Newton. So I do believe that's one of the biggest X factors, because we all know, look, Cam's not the smartest quarterback in the league, but he can definitely throw a dime to an open Greg Olsen on a Y cross or you know, a streaking Ted Ginn Jr. They need that running game.
One of the things that I think has been underplayed is how much Cam has developed as a guy reading defenses, going through his progressions, being a pocket quarterback. Because look, you know, he played 1 year at Auburn. He was at a junior college before that. In Auburn, he didn't, you know, it wasn't a pro style offense, and he really, I don't think he gets enough credit for how far he's come as a guy who can do that stuff, you know, because he's such an unbelievable physical specimen in terms of, you know, we've never really seen a guy like that. He's bigger than Ben, and he's got unbelievable wheels, and he's durable, and he's everything, you know, you want to be. And but he's really developed into a good pocket passer, that, which, you know, I've always been a Cam fan, and I'm not sure I saw him developing into the, you know, this kind of guy this quickly. So credit to him, man. But you know,
how many times do you really see him get popped in the pocket, though?
Virtually never.
How many times was he sacked this year? Do you know right off the top of your head?
I don't know that. I was just looking at their offensive line to see if I could name all five guys, and I couldn't. I got four. I couldn't. I didn't know who the left guard was. Andrew Norwell.
Wow. I mean, I was making fun of him last season because Chris Scott. Remember Chris Scott? He was starting on their offensive line. During the regular season, Cam Newton was sacked. Believe it or not, take a guess how many times Cam Newton was sacked in 2000.
Well, he said believe it or not, so I'm going to guess it's kind of high 30s, 38.
33 times. He only threw 10 interceptions though.
Hey, here's a question for you. If you're D'Angelo Williams, would you trade the season you just had to be playing in this game tomorrow or Sunday?
Too bad you couldn't hook him up to a lie detector test to get that answer, right?
Yeah. Because he had a great season. He had a great season.
In other words, continue in the role that they wanted you to play. You would have had to take a pay cut for sure.
Yeah, and you'd be Jonathan Stewart's backup.
Yeah, you might have 150 carries.
That's a decent guess.
Let's see. Stewart had 242. Tolbert had the non-quarterback. I didn't realize Stewart had so many rushes. 242 total rushes there.
I would have guessed.
Huh?
I would have guessed more.
Would you really?
I would have guessed he was close to 300.
Tolbert was the second as far as running backs go on the roster. Cam Newton had 100. Cam Newton took off 132 times with the football. Second most amount of rushes on a team. Mike Tolbert, 62 during the regular season. Artis Payne, 45. Fozzie Whitaker, 25. So it was pretty much Jonathan Stewart. So in other words, if D'Angelo would have stayed, would he have even touched the ball as a ball carrier 150 times? Or are we looking at 100 carries and 25, 30 receptions?
Yeah, well, I'm counting up how many games Jonathan Stewart missed. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So he missed three games. Stewart missed three games. So he probably would have been right around that 300 carry. So there would have been an opportunity there, the three games he didn't play, to be the lead dog. But, what would your answer be? What would you think his answer would be?
If he was truthful about it?
Yeah.
He'd rather be in that Super Bowl. You know, have you heard LaDainian Tomlinson talk this past week on NFL Network?
I generally try to avoid LaDainian, but no, go ahead.
I do too for the most part, but he's actually been very good this week. And I find myself, because they'll ask, they'll have the panel up there, and, Kurt Warner's been to the Super Bowl. Who's the Patriot?
Dion's been, obviously.
I'm drawing a blank here. Mick, the Patriot that's up on there. McGinnis?
I don't know who it is. Teddy Bruschi. It could be, of them, whoever it is has been there.
Yeah. They get those guys. They start talking about, well, would you trade this or would you trade this? And one time, LaDainian and so many words said, look, I've never been there. I've been to the AFC Championship game a few times, but I can't. Oh, they were asking about how much does experience guys that have already been to the Super Bowl, how much on both rosters here, how much does experience play into this? And LaDainian says, well, I can't answer that question because I've never been to a Super Bowl here. Man, these guys, LaDainian's a great example. I mean, how many great players have there been in the history of the NFL that have never sniffed a Super Bowl? It definitely wasn't. I mean, we saw how much could D'Angelo Williams have maybe taken a pay cut and made and stayed in Carolina for what he earned in Pittsburgh this year?
Could D'Angelo Williams have stayed in Carolina
and taken for the money that he ended up signing with with the Steelers on a 1-year deal?
I don't have a good answer for it. Interesting to hear what he says. I had another one for you, and it escapes me right now. Both Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell came out this week and said if they were healthy, the Steelers would be in the Super Bowl. That was bold.
Bold for sure. I'd buy it.
Yeah, I think you know, Steelers could have won that Denver game. They almost won it without both of them. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a stretch.
The interesting game, obviously, would have been the game against the Patriots. I think we both agree there. We're not going to hit Tom Brady 20 times, 20-plus times in that game the way the way the Denver Broncos front did. The question is would they, you know, would they have been able to outscore New England, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you would have liked their chances better than the Week 1 game, right? To open the season.
Yeah.
Especially if they have, you know, because remember, they didn't have Bell or Martavis Bryant in that game, and they still go. It's go back and watch that game again. I did that about a week and a half ago. Go back and watch it. It is crazy how really the Steelers almost had a legitimate chance to win that game. You know, bless you, against the Patriots there. So yeah, I'm buying what Brown and Bell are claiming there. But of course, how many teams can say the same thing? If only we had X players, you know, healthy, you know, we would have been able to do this or do that as well. But yeah, I can see the reason behind it. It is kind of bold to kind of say, but it's understandable on the flip side of it. What else has caught your fancy here during Super Bowl week? What did you think about Alan Faneca coming out and pray? I mean, kind of what you would expect at this time of year. Alan Faneca's up for the Hall of Fame, and do you remember back to 2004, all those things Faneca had to say after Ben had to, you know, was forced into action after Tommy Maddox went down?
Yeah, he didn't want Ben in there,
basically said he wasn't excited. Do you want to go to work with some little young kid who's just out of college? And some people say that's you know, was blown way out of proportion and all like that. I don't hate Faneca for saying what he said. It's kind of reasonable at the time. The Steelers were kind of projected to be a solid team that year, and then to lose Tommy Maddox kind of week two right out of the chute there, and then you're stuck with a rookie quarterback. There's no way do you envision him going 15-1 there. But Faneca, you know, is down in Santa Clara this week and had some very encouraging things to say about Roethlisberger, about his leadership abilities and all like that. So I thought that was kind of good as well too. Before we get to our picks here, David, you want to kind of reset what you had to talk with to Jerome Bettis about?
Yeah, we just talked about the 10-year anniversary of Super Bowl 40 and being in Detroit and what that was like. And he said one of the things he said is, I talked to him about how the storyline was all about him, not the quarterbacks. And he said, yeah, you know, one of the things was I wanted to take the spotlight. I wanted to enjoy the moment. I knew this was the end for me. And also in taking the spotlight, it meant it wasn't on those guys. They didn't have to deal with as much stuff. He said, I was happy to do it. I wanted all the opportunities. I wanted to soak it in. And so that was interesting. The other story that I got a chuckle out of, and I've never heard this before, he was doing a pitch for Gillette and, you know, protection. And he did a video for Dan Kreider, who was the fullback for 4 years for Jerome. And he talked about how he told Kreider that at one point he said, look, going out of the locker room, I'm going to follow you everywhere. You know, you go. And so he says, you know, this goes on for a little bit and Kreider doesn't really realize it, but like wherever he goes, Bettis is following him on the field before the game. And then finally Kreider realizes what's going on. He realizes he's been kind of running Bettis all over the field for like, you know, 15 minutes. And Bettis is like, Dan Reel is like, you know, literally, I'm following you. And this is the way it's going to be. So it was like that for I guess, every game. And then he tells a story about how one time, you know, Kreider left the locker room and he's out in the field and he realizes Bettis isn't out in the field because he left without him. So Bettis is sitting in the locker room by himself. So Kreider has to go back in the locker room and get him to come out in the field. So I've never heard that story. I get a good chuckle out of that. But we thought
And we kind of talk about, you know, Peyton Manning the other day and how I thought it was kind of good that taking all the focus, you know, by him talking so much or whether or not that's his last game. I kind of took that as a positive. If anybody can, you know, look, this is Manning's, what, fourth trip to the Super Bowl. You know, all the talk being on him and whether or not his last game is really, in my opinion, taking a lot of the spotlight off of the rest of the team.
Yeah, for sure. I'm with that. All right, so who you got?
All right, you going to let me go first this time?
Sure.
I don't think you'd let me go first all season. That's how you beat me this year, by the way.
Was it close or was it not close?
I think it was like 15 games, you know, maybe like every other, like I've been drubbing you for the last 5 years. But you got me nonetheless. I had to kind of chase you during those final couple weeks to make up ground as well, too. Here's my thoughts on things. You know, both these defenses are absolutely great. I kind of expect, you know, a defensive battle here up front. I do believe, as I said, that Cam Newton is the more dangerous quarterback of the two, not only with his arm, but his ability to get outside the pocket. The question is how, you know, will Cam Newton be able to function in the moment? You know, as far as, you know, will he have those pregame jitters? Will it just kind of carry over into maybe an early turnover? That's my biggest concern here. I think as long as Thomas Davis is able to be, you know, 75% of himself, I think it's going to be next to impossible for Denver to run on that front. I actually think the Panthers have a better chance at running the football on Denver than Denver does running the football on the Panthers. I like Denver's secondary better, obviously. But you know, once again, I think if the Panthers are able to run the football, I think that's a big difference in the game here. It's hard for me to go against Carolina here, David, and I'm not going to do it. The line, what are you showing, 5.5?
Yep.
I think Denver covers this in a close game. I like this one to be 23-20 Carolina, and with that, I'm taking the under, and I'm taking Denver plus the points. The over-under right now is, depending on where you look, 45-44.5. So I'm safely under that number, but I do like Denver to cover, and I like Carolina straight up.
Interesting. I'll take Carolina for most of the reasons you said, and I think they'll maybe get a late touchdown to put this thing, make it look not as close as it was. So I'm gonna you know, have them comfortably covering here at 31-16.
So you have the over.
I do, but I'm not going to play that.
Are you going to play Carolina? Are you going to play Carolina straight up?
Yeah, I'm probably going to play Carolina.
All right. Interesting.
But not aggressively. It's not my favorite bet of the year.
Any of the we forgot to look at some of
the props.
Props. Do you
yes,
have
there's
those
one.
In front?
There's one that I love, and it pays almost 3-1. And it's Cam Newton breaking the quarterback rushing record in the Super Bowl, which is held by Steve McNair in Super Bowl 34. He ran for 64 yards. So I think that's good value at 3-1 that Cam has a shot at breaking that.
Let's see here. Will the team that wins the coin toss win the game?
Yeah, we got 100 of those. I was reading those on my show yesterday.
First touchdown.
How about the first touchdown in a minute? Will points be scored in the first minute 30? Pays like 8-1.
I'm going to say no.
And then there's, you know, I think points scored in the first half of the first quarter, 7.5 minutes, I think is closer to even money.
Yeah, I like that. What would the first scoring play of the game be?
Safety, right? Always.
Yeah, 33-1 or something?
It's happened, what, twice now? Three times? I mean, you know.
Well, it happened to Manning, right?
Yeah, will there be a safety in the game? It's, you know, there were like three Super Bowls in a row there was a safety.
No way it happens this time. I think there will be, I said, what, 23-20? I think one of those teams gets to that number the hard way.
Okay.
And in other words, either, you know, two-point conversion,
right,
or a safety. So I think even though that's kind of a standard 23-20 score, I think one of those teams gets there the hard way there. What's your excitement level? As far as this game goes,
relatively neutral, to be honest with you. In terms of Super Bowl excitement, I'm not amped up for the game. It's neutral, flat.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you here, but I admit, if there was ever a team that I'm rooting for it would be the Panthers. I think Jerry Richardson, if there's any owner that tries to model his organization after the Steelers, he said it so himself in past press conferences and all like that. He really has a lot of respect for the Steelers. He kind of admires the way that they do business. I like Ron Rivera, like Thomas Davis. I think that's the kind of team that you want to root for in this situation here. Antonio Brown was asked, he made the media rounds on Thursday, asked if he was going to be rooting for Emmanuel Sanders and the Denver Broncos, and he said no. He doesn't want to have to hear from Emmanuel Sanders how he got a ring before he did. So I think it's safe to say that Antonio Brown will be rooting for the Panthers. Do you remember what happened to Emmanuel Sanders the last time he played in the Super Bowl?
No, you got me stumped. I assume that was down in Dallas. Did he get hurt?
It was a game against Green Bay. Remember he broke his...
Green Bay, yeah. He hurt his foot or something?
Yeah, broke a foot in that game. And remember at that time we were talking about not too long after that, didn't he need another surgery on that? We talked on the podcast about, boy, the last thing you want to hear something happen with a wide receiver is messing with his tools and his feet being one of those, and how still considered him one of the better route runners in the league and yada yada yada. And here we are now all these years later, and boy, he really has flourished in Denver, has he not?
Look, I've always been a huge fan, so I'm happy for him. Good for him.
And now on chance at winning his first Super Bowl here. So, all right, David, we will get hard and heavy for those wondering why we haven't talked about the draft a lot yet. Look, we got to get through prospects. We don't want to just randomly read other people's stuff, you know, in kind of breaking these guys down. We Alex and my guys at Steelers Depot are now really getting hard and heavy into breaking down tape on these guys. So that's kind of been the lull here. Look, we've got almost 90 days to talk about draft prospects here. Plus, it gives David a little time to get educated a little bit on some of these guys, because let's face it, we talk all Steelers all year long, and once the season comes to the end, that's when we kind of switch course here. So expect us from here on out to really get into talking about the Steelers draft and draft prospects and where we think some of these guys will go. As I mentioned on the podcast on Wednesday, I would expect probably to hear Alex Cazora sitting in for David Todd quite a bit in the near future as well too. All right, David, are you where are you going to watch the game at?
You know, unclear at this point. Don't have I'm open. Hit me up. I'm open for a big party.
Yeah, what's your appearance fee these days?
Food and drink, transportation, food and drink.
And young ladies, strippers.
Hey, now, this is a family show.
Yeah, it isn't. Okay, folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you got any complaints, don't send them. If you want to answer anything else that we talked about today, feel free to send us an email.
And check out our if you're on iTunes, give us a review. We got ripped by a couple of people recently, so let's get some good reviews up there. Always good to have that. And just give us a couple of reviews. How's that?
There you go. And to get us out of here.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast. Enjoy the Super Bowl with Dave and Dave.